Hi, everybody. Welcome back to episode 9 of Lab Talks. My name is Ben Putley. I am the CEO and co-founder of Alchemy. And today I'm joined by Nathan. Nathan, would you mind kind of introducing yourself, your job and what you do?
Yes, sure. So hi, everyone. I'm Nathan. I'm head of addressable activation at Kinesso IPG. Currently looking after best-in-class optimizations, best practice campaign setups, as well as enhancing our product proposition. Started in the industry many years ago on the trading desk, setting up campaigns across multiple DSPs. I think this was when DV360 was Invite.
So a while ago, before DVM.
And turning the lights.
Yeah.
And it was a great foundation in terms of knowing how to set up campaigns across different DSPs, different channels, you know, video, display, mobile, how to optimize campaigns, etc. So it's a great foundation. From there, moved on to a tech company on the publisher side, which was great insight and exposure.
Yeah.
But I think my heart was moving back to the advertiser side, which I enjoy a lot more. So moved around different tech agencies, indies, etc., and currently at Kinesso today.
Cool. I think that's often something that is overlooked, is that the ad tech landscape is quite complex. And I think you do really have to have your kind of fingers on keyboards, as it were, to understand the intricacies of each platform to really be able to serve advertisers, I guess, in the way you do now at Kinesso. So I think, it'd be interesting, I think, maybe to kind of talk through a little bit of like what your role kind of entails day to day. Like, is it, are you working across many brands? Do you, how involved are you with the campaign setup? Like, what do you typically look for in a good campaign setup? Just, kind of a bit of a feel for what you do day to day.
Cool. So I oversee all of campaign activation across Kinesso. So looking after our UM initiative, media hubs and our smaller agencies. So the team that we have is across different regions, the UK, India, Poland, and South Africa.
Okay, cool.
And my team basically is the one that sets up the campaigns.
Yep.
So ensuring that we're setting up the campaign for success. So for example, we have a zero tolerant approach when it comes to brand safety, for example.
Makes sense, yeah.
Regardless of who the advertiser is, what vertical they're in, we need to have these things in place across all these different pillars to ensure that we're maximizing opportunities for our clients, ensuring that we show ads on brand safe content. Otherwise, if you're serving it to bots, what's the point of the investment goes nowhere.
Exactly right,
essentially. And we have, you know, best practice campaign guide setups, which is standardized, of course, with client nuances depending on the client. And we have a standardized way in how we actually approach that as well. So we look at different pillars, different themes throughout that as well.
I guess that's in a response to the existence of fraud when you're buying. How much of an impact do you think fraud has? Like, how stringent are your measures when you kind of set up campaigns for success?
Very stringent. Yeah. So proud to say that, you know, we're surpassing all sort of industry benchmarks, but we're not satisfied. We just want to minimize as much fraud as we can as possible. Even though, you know, we're above the benchmarks, can we continue to do more and do further? So, you know, I'm not, even if we're surpassing our client KPIs, I'm happy, but I'm not necessarily satisfied because there's always room for improvement. There's always room to do that little bit more.
Yeah.
This new tech company that's coming into the space can utilize them to benefit the further of our, to go further for our clients. So.
Yeah. And do you find that the fraudsters, if you want to call them that, are trying new tricks all the time? You kind of have to be on your toes with what you're looking for, how you filter, and do you work, what tools do you use to really make sure that you are kind of drilling it down and getting as good as audience possible?
Wherever there's an opportunity to make money, there's always going to be fraudsters, right? And no matter what, you know, processes or technologies you put in place, they'll eventually try and make a way to go around that.
Yeah.
So we utilize, you know, third-party ad verification tools.
Yeah, okay.
Whether that be the likes of IIS, Double Verify, we use DSP in platform tools as well. So there's many different tools that we can use. However, the fraudsters would always, you know, find a way to to try and do something. In the industry, we had, you know, ads.txt. We thought that would solve many problems, but then there was a workaround that.
Yeah.
But they're just simply coming back into the market.
Yeah.
Again, so it's like, okay, how do we continue to adopt and adapt the way we do things to further our investment for our clients?
Yeah, I think it's, I think also now, I guess one of the new ways that they're looking to kind of extract dollars from agencies like Kinesso when they shouldn't be is made for advertising. Like how are you approaching made for advertising or MFA sites, and how much of an issue do you think it might be?
So there's a few ways where we've done that. Even before it became an issue, to be honest, we excluded that from all of our inclusion lists.
Okay,
in a way.
Yeah.
So we wasn't really advocating for that. You know, again, there may be quote unquote high viewability, but it's not having any value for our clients. No incremental, you know, sales. It's just clutter.
Yeah.
So we've gone through a process in our inclusion list.
Yeah.
To remove all of that. And then now with the increased attention on MFAs, partners are utilizing different practices and or tools to enable to eliminate that. So we just have that as an addition on top of our capabilities in-house.
Yeah, it's an interesting problem because we actually were talking a little bit about this yesterday, and it's like, you could argue that every website is kind of made for advertising in some way because publishers like need to generate revenue and they do that for your ad units. And I think it can be, it proposes an interesting challenge, I think, for Kinesso to understand like the good MFA, if you want to call it that, and the bad MFA. And I think that's, I guess, where you have.
I think when we heard the term MFAs, it's not, you know, a publisher where they've got one or two, you know, ad slots. Of course, it's there for advertising, but there are specific sites where when you go on the page in one view, you can see 16 ad spaces.
Yeah, it's like here, and then here.
That's not going to have any impact on, you know, a client's revenue, bottom line, or anything like that. And I think it's those sites that at least our site Kinesso has deliberately removed from any inclusion list a while back now.
Yeah. So once you have the kind of campaign ready to roll and it's live, let's say, what are you doing to kind of optimize towards those specific campaign goals? Because I mean, once you... we experience that, like there are optimizations that you can make all of the time based on the performance. But yeah, I'd be interested to hear what you guys look for and how you kind of work with partners and just make sure you're getting the most bang for your buck, as it were.
Yes, there's different tools that we use within the platform and outside the platform.
Yeah.
So I won't go through, you know, listing all the stuff within the platform, such as, I don't know, geo, device, audience, you know, first party or second party audiences or publishers, etc. In-platform tools that we can look at. But also what I do encourage teams to do is look on the outside as well. What's the impact on our search activity, for example? What's the impact on social, utilizing our, you know, tools to be able to recognize the impact that it has on other channels? Because sometimes what advertisers do is look at channels in silos.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, here's this strategy. It's having a negative impact on ROAS, on programmatic activity. Let's just cut it out. Whereas in reality, if you cut out that audience, that's actually having a positive impact on search.
Yeah, okay.
But obviously, you know, sometimes clients are, they have their own different KPIs. Sometimes they want to do what's best for what they can see on paper or their specific results, as opposed to looking at the bigger and holistic picture, which I think is can be a challenge in our industry because there's a bigger picture at play here. So
it's interesting because there's like that kind of cliche that you can only really determine how effective one channel is if you stop spending on a particular channel and then seeing how that then impacted the KPIs that you had. But I agree, because you may see a video for a brand on your a news publisher or an entertainment site, whatever it may be, and then ultimately search for that brand on Google, and it's that must be tough to tie that together, where it's actually like, hey, the video ad had the impact, but kind of the last click attribution goes to search because they didn't. I think a lot of the time advertising kind of works when you least expect it, kind of like slowly creeps up on you. Like I was actually having a conversation with someone and they were talking about TCL TVs. I was like, where do I know TCL from? And they sponsor one of the billboards that go around the Emirates Stadium. And I was like, they do the highest rated Google reviewed 100-inch TV comes from TCL, and that's worldwide. And I'm like, I only know that because I stare at it from my seats at the football, which is just mental. But that's kind of like a testament to how advertising works. And I think that must be a challenge to, particularly with brands that are, as you say, looking at stuff in silo, to say like, okay, you do need to step back, look at the bigger picture, because all of these things are working together to deliver the results. And it doesn't make sense to pull back on one. You kind of do need to have like a full court press, as it were, across various channels, because you never know where you're going to find your customer.
Yeah, exactly. And I always say, or advise clients and brands, is don't be afraid to innovate.
Yeah, okay.
Brands that are scared to innovate, do something that's not been done before, or don't go with the changes, can often get left behind. Or sometimes they may just sit and do nothing because everything is going well. The campaigns is going past their, you know, surpassing their benchmarks. But by doing nothing, you can often go behind. I'll often think of the example with BlackBerry many years ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When everybody had, you know, a BlackBerry, everybody's work phone was a BlackBerry. Then with the younger audiences, they had BBM.
Yeah,
so I remember BBM. They were getting BlackBerries. I remember having one.
Yeah, a great one.
And they were dominating in that space. But, you know, fast forward a few years, WhatsApp came along, and that was, you know, you could use it on Androids, Apples, etc. And at that time, BlackBerry thought, you know, we're not going to put our guards down.
Yeah.
We're dominating the space. But as you can see, as time went on,
yeah,
I don't even know if BlackBerry still exists today.
I don't think they do phones anymore, you know. I think they've kind of parked that, which is a shame because
they tried to come back a few years later to make BBM applicable to Android and Apple, etc. But by that point, it was too late. Too late. But if at that moment in time, people would have thought, what are you doing? You're moving BBM to other operating systems. But if they had done that, people most likely would be using BBM today, as opposed to WhatsApp. So.
Yeah, I think it's, I definitely think that you, as an agency, definitely encourage that. I think you were one of the first agencies to test Alchemy out. And
I think we were the first, actually.
Yeah, the first, and that kind of taking a risk on that innovation, what was quite a big client with AWS, right? And the results were pretty amazing. I think it was significant reduction, like demonstrated the value of buying ads on the blockchain. And I hope that we are the opposite of the BlackBerry story, where it's like brands that have tried to use blockchain and kind of seen the transparency of the reporting, the reduction in fees, kind of future-proofing the way in which they can purchase media and access customers.
So yeah, I'm a big fan, you know, of the crypto and blockchain space. And when I saw this opportunity, to me, it was simply a no-brainer.
Yeah.
You know, known fees, first of all.
Yeah.
Reduced fees, reduction in carbon emissions.
Yeah.
Increase in working media.
Yeah.
Going to the publisher, rewarding them for the great quality content that they're producing,
totally,
and ultimately better results for the client. So, you know, it's a win-win.
It always amazes, like the infrastructure that supports kind of ad tech at large is older than a BlackBerry, right? It's like 20 years old, and it does a really good job. And it's like facilitated, I think, what, a $600 billion market this year. But it is like creaking at the seams a little bit. You're starting to see now issues. Well, the cookie apocalypse keeps threatening to happen, but I think even before then, there is the opportunity for smart brands, agencies, publishers to look at new solutions. And there's definitely solutions with universal IDs and retail media, particularly in North America, that's looking quite exciting. But I think for smaller markets like Europe, that retail media, it doesn't have the same penetration as like having Walmart servicing a continent effectively. You have local retailers in different markets in the UK, so that application perhaps won't work as well. And one thing that we talk about a lot is wallets as an ID. So like the idea of where you have people that are connecting a wallet to a website, maybe to swap a cryptocurrency or buy an NFT or whatever it may be, using that identifier to target ads, I think has the potential to be quite impactful as a B2C replacement for a cookie, because I think a lot of the universal ID problems are very much a B2B solution to a challenge that's being created by another business, you know, and whereas what the adoption will look like, I think we'll wait and see. I don't know, maybe if you've got some...
I've got the sort of MetaMask as well, doing a few swaps on you know, new up-and-coming
one of us
projects. I mean, it's the proof is in the pudding. There's always these cycles, and, you know, I know there can be often negative press around crypto, saying, oh, there's fraudulent activity going on. It's the same with the retail banks. It's the same with advertising. But, you know, do your due diligence. There's going to be the Bitcoins, the Ethereums, and there's going to be the other coins that has no meaning, no value. There's nothing called substance, you know, but people tend to focus on that and say it's all bad and all doom and gloom.
Yeah.
But it's not all doom and gloom.
Absolutely not, no.
You can actually see the transactions taking place. And when you tie that back into advertising, again, like, you know, you can see the exchanges taking place.
Yeah.
And it goes back to what you were saying about, you know, the transparencies and the fees that are taking place. In the future, I do believe there will be an adoption of the blockchain in that sense. It may not be on a large scale now, just like programmatic was many years ago. But a lot of advertisers are now using, you know, programmatic to fuel their activity. And I believe it'll be the same when it comes to the blockchain.
And I think it allows programmatic advertising to like really realize the promise. You know, I think that because of bad actors and like inefficiencies, it never really became like, because I always thought the open marketplace with the kind of measures that you can create, the best practices that you have, you can actually buy quite effectively from like a PG deal. Really, it's just like a section of open marketplace that you're bidding on for a specific campaign. And I think that if there was more transparency at large across the way you were buying media and the ability to reduce fraud, you could probably get some really good results of just like looking for the identifier they're looking for and just bidding on it where you found it, rather than kind of having to curate deals at a certain point. And I think that, yeah, ultimately adoption plays a big role in that. But then I also think that the penetration of cookies is actually quite a small percentage of internet users, with like the GDPR regulation that came in and the consent windows that come down. I think, unfortunately, a lot of people decline, which is not great for keeping the internet ad funded and kind of keeping content free rather than everything being behind a paywall, you know. So like, that's where I think that agencies like yourself have a really important role to play in like the internet in general, in keeping it ad funded, because that's the best way that everyone can access information freely online about anything, really.
Yeah, I think that's where it comes to, you know, where can we increase the working media for publishers that's generating quality content.
Totally, yeah.
Whether that's, you know, your news publications or diverse and inclusive content, they should be rewarded, you know, for that. And with advancements in technology can come pricing efficiencies, where that can facilitate that change to happen. Going back to, you know, the Alchemy Exchange with the lower fees, it's providing a quote-unquote similar job in facilitating the advertisers to buy ad slots on the publisher. But due to the infrastructure, clients can get it at a much more cost-effective rate to pass that on to the publisher. Sometimes what you see is publishers trying to triple their sort of floor rate because of this. But it's like, hold on a second, if you do that, it may not no longer be a benefit for the client. Don't try and take advantage of the situation. But if you continue to do what you're doing before with the reduced in fees, you will see those increased in revenue.
Totally. I think it's tough, because if you are a publisher and you increase your floor prices too high, you're just not eligible for bids because you're outpricing yourself and they just don't register in the pre-bid auction. It's like, okay, that bid was never even close to the floor, so we can't tell. And so you're like, in some degree, like cutting off your nose to spite your face a little bit, because you're going from, okay, maybe it's $1.50 or $1, but then if you push it up to $3, as you say, triple it, you're going to get $0. So like, in the chase of like artificially overpricing inventory, you end up just getting $0 across the board. And then that very quickly has an impact on the amount of content you can produce, the quality of that content, the regularity of that content, which ultimately detracts from the total audience that you have. And that's what you guys are interested in, right? Is finding the audience that fits the brand and then showing them an ad.
Exactly that. So yeah, I mean, we utilize it, those practices, utilize Alchemy, and we've seen great results. Publishers are happy, you know, we're happy, the client's happy. So it's great.
So when you kind of look, I think it'd be interesting to kind of talk about the future. Like, quite often I think ad tech appears quite doom and gloom, but I don't think it is. I love ad tech. like short term, what are you looking at in terms of innovations? And then I guess like longer term, how are you like planning for cookies disappearing if they do? And yeah, and amongst other things, like kind of how are you looking at brand safety and verification now and kind of in the future?
Yeah, I mean, innovation, as I mentioned before, is something that we always take great pride in, yeah, in doing. Not everything will necessarily work, and what may work for one client may not work for another. Mm-hmm. You know, we know that, but it's always something for us to do. And I think blockchain is very pivotal for that. You know, 15 years ago, people didn't really care much about the dodgy trading that was going on. As long as I'm seeing, you know, results on my campaigns, I'm happy. Mm. Whereas, you know, in today's world, transparency is key.
Totally, yeah.
You know, how can we be transparent? You got traders moving to client side, and you just see a shift in transparency, which I'm a big believer of, and we can adopt that in, you know, practices like the blockchain. Mm. So I feel like if the industry can move to that, where we can, you know, see what's taking place, the transactions, etc., obviously anonymized, but it will be a better place for the industry, helping to reduce ad fraud as well, because, you know, it's harder for me to say that I'm going to have this at, you know, £10. Well, no, the blockchain is verified by the different nodes.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, it's I think it just it provides you with a ton more information. Do you know what I mean? It's like you can make better, more informed decisions on helping. And I think particularly you kind of mentioned it earlier, but like, it's funny that what works for brand A doesn't work for brand B. And it must be a bit of a head scratcher as to like, why doesn't this strategy work for that strategy? Like, let's say it's an FMCG brand, you know, like if it was, trying to think like, cause something like, okay, like you could argue that probably, Nike, which is one of your businesses, and Dulux kind of have a similar kind of audience, right? Like a lot of people that buy paint probably also buy trainers. Like most of them won't say they do, but I can imagine that the best practices that you use for those campaigns are very, very different.
Yeah, I mean, we have different nuances, different verticals. We're about to go into the individual details of obviously each client, but you know, like you said, I can be I can love sneakers, love trainers, and be a painter at the same time. Yeah. They're not going to be two different audiences. It could be one audience.
Yeah.
And it has similar characteristics and behavioral, you know, patterns. And that's what we try to do when we're going after our audiences. Okay. We've got what I tend to call, you know, the Kaizen approach, which is where we want to see continuous improvement.
Yeah.
Which is a Japanese word. Mm-hmm. And then the other word, which is, I think, Kaikeku.
Okay, yeah.
I'm not Japanese, so apologies if it's slightly off. But that's where
your Japanese is better than mine.
Exactly. So that's where you get the drastic changes, the drastic improvements. I'm making a monumental shift in my business. Mm. The way I advertise, I'm making a massive change to see drastic results. And often it's the combination of both.
Okay, nice.
That would help propel a business forward.
And so I if you can like make it in broad strokes, I appreciate you can't go into specifics, but what's like an example of like a significant change that you made versus like an incremental change that you might make? Like what does that framework kind of look like in practice when it comes to like buying media?
Okay, I can give an example of what we've done a few times. So sometimes clients, they for whatever reason, they may do like a managed buy, or you know, a direct service with different partners.
Yeah, okay.
And we show them the benefits of moving to a consolidated approach with Kinesso on programmatic self-serve. That may seem quite simple for people like you and me, but to those clients, it's like, I'm not just gonna. That's a big change for them to
totally agree,
have a lot of, you know, signing IOs and good old photocopies. Send it over, and you know, there's it's limited what you can do. Saying I'm going to move all of that and pull it into a self-serve programmatic activity, it can be quite daunting for them.
Yeah,
but that's a big change. But we've got countless of case studies where we've consolidated their approach to media, managing frequency caps holistically, being able to see the reach across different channels, seeing the pricing efficiencies, the efficiency gains, increases in performance. That's what I would call a drastic change.
Yeah, okay.
Whereas a continuous improvement could be, okay, I got this custom bidding algorithm.
Yeah.
It's been working well, but mm-hmm. with the new imports that we see, let's modify it slightly.
Yeah.
And again, that would be continuous improvements of what's already
okay.
working well.
And is that, do those inputs tend to be like bidding at different times or price points or on different inventory or kind of various?
Yeah, looking at different floodlights, for example,
yeah, okay.
or rating them differently
yeah.
according to the data that we see now. Often, sometimes people or advertisers may think, oh, this worked 10 years ago.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah,
going to
yeah.
stick to this.
Yeah.
This is what worked 10 years ago. I'm not changing. Whereas in reality, mm-hmm. you know, the economy is different to what yeah, it was
totally.
Pre-COVID. To now, you know, it's there's loads of moving parts that's
yeah.
taking place.
I think it's interesting you make that point, the earlier point you made around like the drastic change, which can just be as simple as from going from an IO to buying media as in a consolidated approach. And I wonder if that's because a lot of those brands will still purchase media across like print, which is still very much like IO based. You can't buy print digitally. TV is kind of becoming a bit more digital in the way that you can buy it, but still you buy it through an upfront, you sponsor channels, you know what I mean? Like that linear TV is still a big market versus like digital advertising, which is much more akin to, I mean, the way in which you might try and like buy a crypto or sell a crypto. Like you are really trading media at that point. And I can imagine that is challenging for a brand to understand and like have the expertise across each of those respective channels. And I guess is probably the joy of working with an agency like Kinesso, your expertise in that.
Yeah, and that's what we're, you know, here to do, also educate clients. So we may have a mixture of clients that are at the beginning of their programmatic journey to, you know, clients that are well advanced in, you know, the maturity frameworks
yeah.
and, you know, how programmatic operates and runs, et cetera. So it's always nice and it's always rewarding
yeah.
For the clients to, you know, for us to take them on the journey with us and ultimately see the results that they're looking for
yeah.
and utilize, you know, our programmatic journey together.
When do you find that a brand is kind of ready to do programmatic advertising? Like what's that kind of trigger? I bet it varies, but like if there's like a, is it when the brand reaches a certain size or is it like a specific brand that suits paid media really well or like a combination of the both? I'd be interested to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you're even if you're a local business, for example, you can still utilize, you know, certain programmatic
yeah.
Or digital practices
mm-hmm.
to help drive, I don't know, customers to your store
yeah.
or customers to okay. your site to purchase something that's quite unique. Obviously, the range of things that you can do may differ depending on the size of your business, but there's always opportunities in the digital landscape or ecosystem to help drive, you know, revenue for brands. I think when you look at, you know, Meta, for example, Facebook or Instagram,
yeah.
you've got local businesses, even influencers, that's just being able to run ads on their campaigns for whatever reason, to
yeah.
drive traffic or to purchase a product, knowing that, you know, they're going to get an affiliate fee or some sort. So it depends on the nature of the business, what they're trying to achieve, and that can determine what route that client may want to go.
Yeah, I think I was looking at a company, I think it was something like Dan Ads or something like that, that was doing self-serve for regional news publishers. And I was like, that's kind of, it's almost like the Yellow Pages have come full circle. Do you know what I mean? Like you can like buy an ad, like if you're a plumber in the East London or whatever it is, it would make sense for you to buy the local newspapers. And if you can do that digitally, it probably has the same sort of impact that buying across Facebook in that kind of same region would, but you're kind of funding the creation of content in what is small local publishers, which serve a community. So yeah, it's cool that you're seeing good results for brands that look to do that. And it's not just, okay, you've got to get to a certain size and do a certain thing. Cause we speak to blockchain brands, right, that have like historically done more of like the growth, like working with influencers or kind of using a lot of social and then kind of going from social to like sponsorships. You see people like Bybit sponsor a Formula One team, you know, crypto.com have the crypto.com arena. And I think that for me, there's for a companies that really are focused on using a blockchain, which gives you attribution effectively. You can see exactly which transaction moved from here to there and here, to then use just kind of sponsorship where you get very little attribution, if any. Seems like they're kind of ripe for moving into paid media and like taking advantage of like the huge amount of crypto media publications that are kind of blowing up. There's, we spoke to a publication recently, and February was his biggest ever month for traffic. So like that space is growing quite nicely. And I think where you've got proper journalists writing proper content about different blockchain protocols or projects or software or advancements or the regulation, you're kind of growing an audience of people that are like really tech savvy, that are early adopters and innovators, which is very interesting for kind of more web two brands, if you want to call them that. So it's, I think it's interesting. Maybe there's some clients that you can win there, some big blockchain exchanges. Yeah, yeah. But like, I think that is a big part of the sector that can, that's a nice byproduct of blockchain becoming more well-known, more adopted. You know, like you've had ETFs this year, which are bringing it into the financial mainstream. And it just seems like obvious that people can take a similar path to what Kinesso did and like bring blockchain into the advertising mainstream and like really see the advantages of it.
Yeah, definitely enough to see that more. And going back to what you said, it's always, you know, rewarding where you can get a company that's relatively small and then you see them grow, you know, from one headcount to another headcount to another headcount, investing more, launching into different markets. And over the years, I've been fortunate to, you know, to do that with certain clients as well. Yeah. And, you know, it's always great to see that.
Let's like kind of cast our mind a little bit further forward. Like, aside from, I mean, I love that you said blockchain. That's awesome. We're a blockchain company. But outside of blockchain, like what other areas of innovation are you excited about in terms of like getting more performance for the brands that you work for?
So, yeah, I mean, at Kinesso, we have a lot of tools that we have that we're testing now. We've tested as well, whether that's custom algo tools or we have a few products in beta at the moment.
Cool.
I don't know how much I can
speak. Don't say anything you can't. Don't worry. Yeah.
But yeah, we have a lot of internal tools that we're working with. We've got what we call the... even as simple as the ETA, I think the Emerging Tech Assessment, I believe, where we are evaluating and assessing our clients based on the cookie deprecation, basically.
Okay, yeah.
What are you doing now? How much of your activity will be affected? What can you do in future? And we've seen great results as a result of that in terms of actions and preparing people for that. What is surprising to see is that, you know, some clients want to, this is in the industry, broadly speaking, is that some clients may want to wait until the 11th hour to try and do things. As I know, it's been pushed back again by Google. It's almost like, you know, Arsenal fans say next year we're going to win the league. Next year we're going to win the league.
It's going so well.
But it's like you said, cookies, like Safari users, Firefox.
Yeah.
They've been gone.
Exactly right.
It's not like cookies they've been gone. Yeah. There's only a percentage that's left. Yes, Google as a, you know, significant player in the game, but you know, Safari users, which could be arguably, you know, seen as the more affluent users, higher, you know, net worth individuals, etc., is not there. So it's doing something today that would affect tomorrow. We're utilizing and seeing an increase in adoption.
Yeah,
and also on top of that is of course utilizing partners where we can utilize their tech as well.
I think it's funny that because I remember I was working at Share3 when GDPR rolled out, and it didn't exist one day, and then the next day it did, and everyone was like, shit, what do we do, you know? And I think that I'd hope, and it sounds like you are pushing people to not make that mistake again, because all of a sudden it was very frantic. Like campaigns went, you couldn't even like attribute an impression pixel, you know, like people didn't know how ads were being even seen anywhere, you know. So it was, and I think maybe it's because like North America is a huge ad market and it just kind of affected tiny little, which it's the rest of the world if you ask some Americans, right? But I think that will happen at large across all of the ad markets in the world effectively, and I think that will prompt some pretty significant changes to the way that ads are purchased. But like, I mean, even contextual targeting is a great solution, you know, like getting ads that are relevant to the content on page makes a ton of sense, regardless of like the behavioral targeting that goes along with it. So I agree, there are tons of solutions out there already that work, as you say, on Safari, Firefox, even device IDs on Apple phones in general are now gone, you know? So like the way in which ads are targeted is gonna have to change. And I think that, as I said earlier, but like, I think wallet IDs will be a really interesting one. I think it's just a case of a bit more adoption of just like, the every person has a wallet. I don't think we're quite at that stage yet. I think it's still not the best user experience to set up a wallet. It's like, it's a bit terrifying. It's a bit clunky sometimes, and it's not that easy to onboard yourself. And also I think there's obviously warnings and don't trust anything that you don't think you can trust. But like when you have your wallet, you can go out into the big bad kind of crypto world and do whatever you want to do, which is like, awesome, but also like if you're not quite au fait with everything you should be doing, can be quite terrifying because there's a lot of whales that are around that will take advantage of that. So there's a UX challenge that I think will be required to be solved. And
I mean, you know, relatively speaking, still fairly early days. Totally, you know, I know some people are crazy when they heard something called the internet, but you know, take a phone from someone for 2 hours and they can't live again. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was actually looking that Nokia have re-released the 3210 and they're calling it a dumb phone rather than a smartphone. And like the guy that released it was just, I think it's on LinkedIn. It's like, it's amazing how much time you get back when you can't do loads of stuff on your phone. I'm like, yeah, it makes sense, but I need to book an Uber. So, but yeah, I think there's a graph that tracks like internet adoption versus number of wallets, and it puts blockchain wallets at around 1999, which is like before the internet really kicked off and got going. So it feels like we're in like the beginning of that curve that's going to point up quite sharply. So I'm interested to see if that remains true. It'd be cool if it did. But I also think there's something to be said for hardware, you know, like the last big innovation in hardware was phones, right? And that was the year of the mobile. I think you probably lived through it 10 times like I did. But I'm always interested in always thinking about like, what is that next killer bit of hardware? I don't know if it's the Vision Pro. I think that's got a bit more legs because it's Apple, you know, and it's got a little bit of, people will probably walk around with an Apple Vision Pro on, but maybe not another AR headset because it's got that coolness, you know. But I don't know if that's what it is. I think that'll be interesting to see you play out, like what is the next killer bit of hardware.
Yeah, I think time will tell, and as users get more, you know, educated and start to tap into the space like I did a few years ago, I think we'll definitely see some sort of adoption, and we'll see what that next, you know, hardware.
Yeah, because I think you must have experienced it as well. Even just like the ways in which you can use your wallet has increased significantly in the last 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, you know, like it's a lot easier to get involved in crypto, but there still is that hurdle to entry, I think. So we'll see. We'll see how we go. I don't know what it would be. Wish I knew.
Yeah.
I guess part of the innovation role and talking about wallets is educating your advertisers and what they need to be doing. I'd be interested to hear like how'd you go about doing that day to day?
So yeah, good question. There's been a few cases where I've sort of presented internally within a wider agency on sort of blockchain technology, transparency, how we can utilize that, use Alchemy as an example as well. And surprisingly, there's actually a keen interest when explain it, the background, how that can relate to advertising and your clients, you see the eyes sort of perk up and it's like, okay, tell me more. I've seen this in the newspaper and the press. What you're saying is this. How can we, and then from there we get more people even trying out Alchemy, for example.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is producing brilliant results. Mm. This is part of our always on activity. So that's something that I've sort of taken great pride in doing. Of course, you know, getting you players like yourself to come into the office as well. And I think we just continue to promote the great work that's been showcased. It's I said at the beginning, it's a win-win. So
I guess there's been some horror stories in crypto in the last 3 years, you know, like people that perhaps weren't behaving themselves. Do you think that the fact that it's in the news a lot more and it's kind of being talked about more regularly is turning that into a bit of a tailwind for kind of the adoption of blockchain by advertisers, for media buying? I think that's helping your education, basically, is the question.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes what people don't know, they'll shove it under the carpet or say, you know, oh, it must be true, or, you know, it's too good to be true.
Yeah.
But once you get that education out there and you realize, well, you know, what's happening in crypto, it's happening in retail banking, it's happening in advertising, it's happening in many other spaces. So once you can filter that out, and not say that crypto's all good, there's bad actors.
Totally, yeah.
In many different areas.
Frizzy haired one in particular.
Yeah, exactly. Going in and out. But I think it, we can see the practicality or something.
Yeah.
And how it can easily be implemented. Mm. You know, we didn't have to create a wallet to get Alchemy up and running. Yeah. It's pretty straightforward, utilizing the technology that's already there.
Yeah.
It's like with, you know, when Uber's first came out, for example, people was like, oh, it's hurting our, you know, black taxis, our black cabs, it's our heritage. The reality is technology has come out. It's a more efficient way for people to get from A to B.
Yeah.
You have to jump on a wave or pay the premium prices.
Yeah, exactly.
To
right.
get from destination A to destination B.
Totally.
It's your choice. You know, it's a choice at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I think you can wait a long time if you're standing on the wrong road to find a black cab. You know, it's going to be difficult, or if someone's in it already. So yeah, I agree. I think there's always some jobs that are like replaced by technology, but then there's always jobs that are created with new technology as well. So
that seems to be a scare with AI. I know it's more of a sort of a buzz term now, but it's nothing new.
Yeah.
You know, with programmatic is, you know, based on the forms of AI. And even though AI is taking away some of those jobs off the task where it's, you know, repetitive and mundane, I see it also as an opportunity to sort of increase the workforce, because AI should be making our campaigns work more efficiently and effectively, causing bigger outcomes for our clients. If that's doing so, we should be able to increase headcount to do more of the, you know, strategic elements, the stuff that we can actually enjoy doing, as opposed to, you know, pulling a report every day. When I think about when I first was doing trading, you know, I used to take great pride in setting up 30 line items on a 5K campaign that lasted for 30 days.
Yeah.
But when you look back, you know, after all these years and see where, you know, AI has pushed us towards, that can all just be consolidated now. Mm-hmm. So no longer does the company pay me to set up multiple line items, to pull an Excel report every day to see if we're pacing correctly. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got the dashboards, we've got the UI to do automation to do that for us. Now I can look at the bigger picture, look at it holistically. Is there anything that we can do to help increase value for our clients? Is there other parts of the pie that we wasn't thinking of before? And as a result, AI can help to create jobs as well. I know some people may get scared, oh, you know, in 20 years time, I'm not going to have a job.
Yeah.
But, it's, you know, we could have more meaningful jobs.
I agree. It's like if you think about like when people used to use a typewriter to send some posts to someone, you know, like fundamentally they used a keyboard to write that letter and send it. So when email came around, it wasn't like there wasn't any transferable skills. Like, you know how to use a keyboard, you know how to send an email, basically. And that's not too different sending a letter, right? It just gets there sooner, which means you have more time to do tasks that are higher value, is exactly as you're saying. And I imagine that AI will do something similar. You know, it's like we're, at the moment it's under development, but we're building out our own, we're calling it a demand side agent. So the ability to use a prompt-based model to, let's say that somebody in the team was asking us to for a brief response, you know, like rather than you email Aaron or Andy, you just ask the AI tool to spit out your brief response, and then your deal IDs are then ready to go. And then we would probably speak to you about like, okay, this is done a lot of that initial legwork to get us to the point where the campaign is ready to roll. And then like, how do we work with you to ensure that the best practices are being used and we have the right verification partners and spend more time thinking about how can we optimize the bidding strategy to get the results that you want. And as you say, yeah, then it's when you're the experience that you have in creating all those campaigns and optimizing all those campaigns is something that I don't think AI can do, or at least won't be able to do. And that's where you always have that advantage of like learned and gained experience of the intricacies of, to go back to a very early point of like each individual platform, and maybe one platform works better in one region or another region or a certain type of format. Like that's difficult to know unless you've done it, in my opinion. So I think, yeah, as you say, it will allow agencies to kind of add more of that value, which differentiates yourselves from other agencies. You know, you're like individual expertise on campaign creation and purchasing different types of media, and all of that, which makes like Kinesso great, will be amplified somewhat with the use of AI.
Yeah, and you still need someone to compute or tell the information of what you want as well, with like with machine learnings, etc. It's all part of, you know, seeing our clients get, you know, a bigger reward for their investments, which is what we're here to do as the agency.
Yeah, so I think although everyone's always like doom and gloom about the cookie apocalypse, I think it does, like sometimes something has to be changed for people to change their behavior a little bit. And it, from what you said, it does sound like there's a ton of really exciting innovations that are out there that will increase the performance and kind of provide value for brands that are using paid media to access their audiences. So I think it's probably more of an exciting time than perhaps like a doom and gloom time, but maybe that's just me.
No, definitely exciting. And I'm looking forward to see what the space is, you know, going to be in a few years' time. One thing that I do love about our industry is that it's always changing.
It is, yeah.
Always something
moves
new.
Fast, yeah.
Keep on your toes and yeah, try and, you know, be ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
And the competition.
It is very similar to blockchain in that respect. You know, like you have to stay on your toes in blockchain because stuff changes all the time. And I think that, if you're curious, it presents like a really interesting kind of place and space to work in. I think it's cool that we can kind of tie those two together because there's a ton of similarities between the way that cryptos are traded and the way that ads are traded programmatically. And just there's some bits that crypto could do better and learn from the best practices of media buying. And then the opposite is true as well. So it's like they are, I think we'll be close friends as they both kind of get, they see the advancements post cookies and then the advancements post more adoption of blockchain. So yeah, it's, I think it's an exciting time to be in media buying, I would say. All right. Well, Nathan, I think we've covered quite a lot there. I think that was really interesting chat. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, pleasure.
You're
pleasure
more than welcome here. Back anytime. And I'm sure we'll see you around, but thank you very much, Nathan. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Cheers.